Midwifery for the People is a podcast about reimagining the way we approach the entirety of the birthing year. Margot's goal is to combine her radical imagination with her knack for strategizing to bolster the birth revolution and a larger global revolution of feminine consciousness. Midwifery for the People is a production of the Indie Birth Association and IndieBirth.org. No material on this podcast should be considered medical advice. Birth is not a medical event. Now here's your host, Margot Blackstone.
Hey, welcome to this episode of Midwifery for the People with me, Margot Blackstone. Today we are going to talk about death, our relationship with death, how it impacts birth, and how it impacts birth workers. And you know how when you start focusing on something or the universe sort of points you in a direction and you start seeing the same thing kind of crop up over and over again? That has been true for me for many years, really, but especially in this last couple weeks, I have been seeing really interesting things about death and our relationship with death and things that are making me think about it more deeply, kind of all over the place. So I'm going to bring some of those together for you today in this episode. And we're going to start with this newsletter that I wrote a couple of weeks ago, which I feel like probably is what kind of kicked me off in this direction most recently. It was originally, you know, kind of about miscarriage. And there's a section at the end where I felt really like, ooh, yeah, this is what I'm wanting to talk more about. And I even say that, you'll hear me in a moment when I read it, where I say, like, this could be an entire book. And this isn't an entire book, but it is an entire episode. So let's just start there with this. This is where the thread most recently has begun for me. I said, helping women through loss is holy work. We owe it to women and to ourselves to hone the art of this, since death will always be part of birth work. During my shamanic studies, I was instructed to do a journey and ask for a guide to assist me in my service work. And if you're not familiar, a shamanic journey is basically a meditation. And to me, my service work means my midwifery and birth work. During this journey, I met a guide quickly who appeared as an Egyptian dog-headed man. After the journey, I shared this with my teacher, who laughed and laughed and said it sounded like Anubis. And then I went and looked up who that might be. And Anubis is the Egyptian god who guides souls to the underworld. A midwife whose service guide was a death god, Odir. But to me, it makes perfect sense. And this is where I could write an entire book. I think the number one thing that is wrong with how we do birth is our deep cultural disrespect for death and the possibility of death in birth. This is what drives women to make fear-based choices. This is what makes midwives scared to step out of the box in serving women. This is what puts litigation and fear front and center instead of letting magic and life be front and center. So there's a lot there, and I think we're going to unpack it over the course of this episode. And the journey that I'm referencing here was actually a couple years ago now. And a little bit before that was a birth that I attended where the baby died. And I might say some more about that later on, but I feel like that was a huge turning point in my life, not just as a midwife, but as a person. And this interest in death and the way that our relationship with death impacts the way we live and the way that we are birth workers is really just so fascinating to me and has been really central for the last few years. And then again, here in the last few weeks, all kinds of little things have been popping up. And actually, right before recording this podcast, kind of while doing one last Facebook scroll, as one might do, and this was sort of what tipped me over into deciding to do this topic today instead of waiting, I saw a post for a GoFundMe page, and it was for a couple whose baby had died And as I was reading it, I was glancing around sort of quickly, and I clicked it and didn't realize it was somebody that I knew. It was a friend of somebody that I knew. And this person had actually had a midwife that I personally know as her midwife at this birth this month where the baby died. And so it felt like just a final confirmation that, yep, this is what I need to be talking about right now. But another one of the things I wanted to weave in today is, it's going to seem like it's not related for a minute here, but just stay with me. This sort of semi-viral post that has gone around that I saw in a midwifery group on Facebook. And it is a post, and I'm just going to read it to you. It's a post where the image in the background is a woman laboring on a birth ball. And the text over it says, "Variations of normal in birth that are pathologized." And then it has a list. And the list is shoulder dystocia, breech babies, nuchal cords, babies over 9 pounds, 40 plus weeks gestation. And so a midwife posted in this group being like, what is going on here? This person's trying to rebrand shoulder dystocia as a variation of normal. Like, where is this coming from? And I'll point out, I guess maybe I'm being petty here, but variations is spelled wrong on this post. But so we've got this list of things that this woman is saying are normal, that we should consider normal. And again, I'm not going to get into like the nitty-gritty here, but what they probably mean by shoulder dystocia in this context is, you know, in the mainstream medical world, any birth where the head is born and the body doesn't immediately follow is often called a shoulder dystocia. So maybe they're saying that's a variation of normal when the head and the body are born on separate contractions, et cetera, et cetera. But the underlying ethos of this post and posts like it is that everything is normal. And another midwife in thread said, if you go far enough down that path, death is a variation of normal. So here we are, right? And this is what I think 99% of the arguments or sort of this like push and pull in the birth community over different topics, you know, interventions, how protocols, how we're supposed to do this. It's this argument around like, you know, around death. And so there's this one side, and ironically, both sides are coming from a place of fearing it, I believe. And one side is fearing the possibility of it, this like more free birth side, this like just trust birth enough and it will go well side. I feel a lot of fear come from that perspective. Fear of outcomes they didn't want, fear of surgery, fear of medical intervention, and fear of death. Maybe a little less so than the other side, which is, you know, midwives who are vanilla mainstream muggle midwives who seem, the energy that I get from them is that if they follow their protocols, if they do evidence-based midwifery or evidence-based medicine, I'm doing air quotes here, then the possibility of death is very small or none. And so it's just so interesting to see the different ways that people can take similar fears and turn them into something that looks different. But at the core, it's really death that we're talking about and arguing about. And I just wanted to highlight this phrase, variations of normal. And then also this other word in here, which is pathology or pathologized. So is death normal or is death a pathology? Is a question, I think, that's really important for people to sit with. And, you know, if death is not normal, does that mean it's abnormal? Does that mean it is pathological? And if death is pathological, is it always pathological or is it sometimes normal and okay? And these, I think, are just really central cultural questions that we don't know how to answer. And because of that, it makes it really hard to be a midwife in this context. Because if we actually look at the definition of normal, which I have pulled up here. There's a couple. One is conforming to a type, standard, or regular pattern, characterized by that which is considered usual, typical, or routine. So, you know, in that case, no, death is not typical, right? In birth, it does happen, but it's not routine. And then we also have another definition here, which is occurring naturally, right? And so if we use that as a definition, then death in birth is normal. It does happen naturally. It is not something anyone's making happen, but it is, you know, certainly something that naturally occurs for mammals, whether we like it or not. And I think, you know, in the Western medical perspective, death at any age, but particularly for babies, is always someone's fault. There's always a reason. There's someone to blame. Something must have gone wrong. It must be pathological. And I think that does a lot of harm. And my personal belief, you don't have to believe this, of course, is that for us to bring more humanity back to birth, to remove a lot of the fear that's there, and to let women's power be central to the experience, we need to become okay with the possibility that death is one outcome of the process. Not that we would want it to happen, but then when it does happen, it's okay. I'm not saying anyone wants it. I'm not saying we have to be happy about it, but that it doesn't have to mean something went wrong or that anyone is to blame, because there's so much blame, shame, guilt around death, again, at any age, but particularly when babies die at birth. There's, you know, so much litigation. There's so much finger pointing, and it's not helpful. It doesn't allow people to grieve in a healthy way. It doesn't allow people to move forward in a healthy way. More on that in a moment. But I just think this particular post was such a fascinating example of sort of this rift that's happening, but where, you know, there's this third perspective that isn't being brought in, which is who cares about what variations of normal are and which things are pathology to some degree, right? There's this really fascinating belief on both sides that we can control the process. So whether that's by controlling the environment and making sure nobody is there, or, you know, nobody touches the mom, nobody touches the baby, like just being hyper-controlling about the environment. Or on the other side, being hyper-controlling with, you know, really rigid protocols and practices and evidence-based midwifery. Either way, there's this idea that we can control the process. And what I think we bring to the table here at Indie Birth that's really different is this humility, which is we can't control the process. There is so much mystery. There is so much out of our control and also out of our understanding. And I think this is where it gets really nuanced, because that doesn't mean we don't do anything. That doesn't mean we sit on our hands if somebody's, you know, bleeding excessively. Or, you know, in my own personal case, it doesn't mean that I wasn't willing to do some interventions or even take pharmaceuticals to try to bring down like my blood pressure, which I won't get fully into the story there. But it doesn't mean that we don't still have to make choices based on what's available in our current day and age. It just means that those choices don't need to be made out of fear. And so getting into right relationship with death and the possibility of death in pregnancy and birth allows us then to tap into our higher self and our intuition more clearly, to then make those choices based on the tools, techniques, options that are available to us. All right. The other thing I wanted to share was just a quick little quote. I've been reading this book by Pema Chodron, which is called How We Live is How We Die. I was at a really cute local bookstore recently and wanted to pick something out. And this was the one that jumped off the shelf at me, which I find very appropriate, again, for where I'm at in my life and what feels so interesting to me. So I wanted to read a little paragraph to you. Maybe you can hear my pages flipping here. Okay. This is on page 176, and she says, "One of my main intentions in writing this book has been to help people become more curious than afraid, especially when it comes to death and dying. To fear death is a daily burden, and as I've tried to explain, an unnecessary one. Death is part of the ongoing and endless series of bardos, a wondrous flow of birth and death. In order to be fully intimate with life, I feel we have to be fully intimate with death." So this is a great resource for people who are interested in exploring their relationship and their beliefs and ideas and fears and all of it. There's so much more material out there in the world, and there's moments where I'm tempted to perhaps do a death doula training myself. Maybe I will do that eventually. But regardless, I think it is so crucial, especially as birth workers, that we spend time and go slow and continue to learn and figure out what it is we believe and how we are coming at this topic and how it impacts all the rest of the parts of what we are doing as birth workers. Because, you know, as she said, in order to be fully intimate with life, I feel we have to be fully intimate with death. And what I've seen personally is that when I've talked with midwives who have experienced a death, whether it's maybe a term, a full-term loss, stillbirth, or a baby who dies in the early postpartum, or whatever the case may be, when there is a death, what tends to happen in this Western context is they compartmentalize. They have to sort of, like, they could retell the story to you. They can tell you the lessons they learned from it. But they have to compartmentalize it so that the possibility of it happening again doesn't feel real. And I've seen this and I've felt this when I'm talking to elder midwives who haven't reconciled or integrated these pieces of themselves. And I think it really negatively impacts the care that they can give other women. And it is really is like a lost opportunity, because that experience is so valuable. Not that anyone ever wants to go through it as a midwife or as the mother, but it is such a valuable experience to bring to the table as a midwife because it's real. And if we can integrate it in a healthy way ourselves, we can show up better as midwives. We can offer something different and more authentic for our clients. And I think, you know, for me, after I experienced this as a midwife, a birth where the baby died, I knew that going forward, I didn't want to be one of those midwives who had compartmentalized it and kind of shoved it to the side and just marched forward. I didn't want to do that. At first I did, because I had other people do right away. And it was sort of like I had to decide if I was going to have those people find a different midwife or not. And I chose to stay with them, which I think was the right call. But I knew that long term, that was not going to be sustainable for me. I needed to find a way to grieve this loss and to understand my experience and then integrate it into what I offered. Not keep being a midwife in spite of it, but be a midwife because of this experience and know that it was a valuable experience that makes what I do even more impactful. Because now when I sit with someone, I am incapable, because I've integrated it, I think, to a fairly high degree at least. When I interview with people, there is no bullshitting them. You know, if they ask about the risks, if they're at all on the fence, if they're not sure about the safety piece, and even if they are, I do tell them, even with all of the precautions, even with my skills and training, babies can die during this process. Mothers can die during this process. I have not experienced that myself, but I do know that is also true. And it is really important to me that I can gauge how that information lands for them. Do they immediately try to push it away? Do they take a moment to sit with that and reflect on it? Have they clearly already thought about this? Those are the things I want to know. And not just thought about it, but have they actually felt into like that possibility? And are they ready to take on the responsibility around all of it, even though they don't have control? Does that make sense? So again, as Pema Chodron said, to be fully intimate with life, we also have to be fully intimate with death. And I don't think that means you need to have experienced a death as a birth worker in order to be a good birth worker. But I do think that in order to be a good birth worker, you need to have done your work around being intimate with death. What does that mean? What does that look like? How does that feel in your body? And the other thing I wanted to share, I think this is the last piece. This is actually something really beautiful that was shared on an Instagram page that I follow that has nothing to do with death. It's actually a man who is indigenous to the place where I currently am. I'm in Tucson, and he is someone who is from the Tohono O'odham Nation and people. And he posts other cool things about like fitness and wellness and that sort of thing. But his great grandma died, and he shared some really beautiful things about death and his perspective as an indigenous person and all of that. And I apologize, it's actually his grandmother, not his great-grandmother. She was 96. And so there's a bunch of slides, but I'm going to just share one of them with you. I'm going to read it. And this is from Tosh Collins. And he says, "I believe that the complexities of death and grief extend beyond what is to be shared online, with the deeper aspects reserved for in-person dialogues and communal experiences. These nuances can only be fully grasped through lived experiences over time. Nonetheless, to spark interest among our community, I find it essential to offer a brief virtual perspective that diverges from mainstream American narratives. For the O'odham who seek to honor our ancestral views on the spirit world, we must further distinguish between Western religious influences and our O'odham Hindog. Allowing oneself ample time to grieve is vital for personal and familial well-being. It fosters a deeper comprehension of humanity and the acceptance of our eventual passage. This approach dispels the fear, shame, and guilt surrounding death, which are often perpetuated by religious doctrines and societal norms. From an Indigenous standpoint, we view this transition as a sacred evolution from mortal existence to a heightened state of consciousness, and we celebrate it accordingly. I believe we need," this is him still speaking, "I believe we need to revitalize, preserve, and evolve our death and grief practices to meet the demands of our people's needs and grieve in the healthiest way possible." And I think I'm going to share just a couple more thoughts from that are stimulated from that, and then that will be our closing here. I, you know, love how excited we all are about restoring birth, you know, and having it be honored as a sacred rite of passage. But I think over and over and over again, I'm seeing and feeling how unless we also believe the same things and understand death in the same way as a rite of passage that is to be honored, not feared, that's natural, and having, you know, I'm of Scandinavian descent and a little bit of Irish and a little bit of, you know, this and that, but primarily Scandinavian descent. So, you know, as somebody who has had many generations in my lineage of people who are colonized, and death has been viewed from a Christian, largely Lutheran perspective in my lineage, you know, I can clearly see how not having the rituals, not having the clear, for me, it doesn't feel like a clear understanding of the process or what it means. Not having that in my lineage has obviously impacted my family and me in my life. And so I know that that's also true in a very different way for people who are indigenous to this place, and colonization is a more recent experience. But regardless, I think all of us have this project at hand, which is to, again, just get into right relationship, whatever that means, however that feels, with death. Because if we don't do that, all of our attempts to help birth be a more sacred experience are futile. Because with birth always will come the possibility of death, no matter how sophisticated our technologies get. Like, we cannot control this process. And those numbers have not really changed a whole lot over time, if you really want to, like, get nerdy and look at the stats. So, I guess that's where I will leave us today, is just my plea for birth workers to think about this, feel into it, and, you know, a starting place, I think, for me, for sure, has been thinking about my own mortality. And without getting into a whole, you know, another super long story, I guess I'll get into, like, a little bit of it, even though I said we were almost done. Ha ha ha. I experienced a really intense panic attack right at the beginning of 2024. I'd never had panic attacks. I had my first one about a year ago, springtime 2023. And the biggest one that I had was right after the new year. And all of my big panic attacks that I've had have come out of a fear that something fatal was happening to me. So there was this fear that, in this case, I was having a stroke. I was like, I feel like something's wrong. Maybe I'm having a stroke. Having that thought that I might be having a potentially fatal experience triggered then a new layer of panic. So it's like panic on panic. And in the weeks following, I did not feel like I was back to normal. And I did end up going to the ER. And came home, and I didn't feel normal for literally a month. It was really intense. And in retrospect, I think it had a huge amount to do with my beliefs about death and fears around death and dying in this moment. I am a single mom. My kid's dad is sort of not in the picture, he's not in the picture anymore after we got divorced. And there were some new beliefs around, like, what it would mean if I died because of that. And so it's just fascinating to see how our bodies respond to those fears and beliefs and ideas and thoughts. And then in the weeks afterwards, I really spent a lot of time, because I had to, right? This affected me so physiologically that I couldn't just be like, oh, yep, back to business as usual. There was this echo and the repercussion of this huge panic attack was like I said, a month of feeling like I was in fight or flight on the verge of a panic attack the entire time. It was really wild. So I had to look at things. I had to deal with them if I wanted to get out of this state, at least without taking a bazillion kinds of medication, which I did not do. So I think if you're someone out there who's like, ooh, this is really interesting, where should I start? Of course, I'm a nerdy book person, so I would start with seeing what books call to you in this sort of genre. But I also would really encourage you to look at your own feelings and thoughts around your own eventual death and start there. Start with the personal, and then let yourself explore some of the other really specific and, you know, nuanced places for you as a birth worker, if you're a birth worker, around what a death for a client would mean. You know, someone you're working with, if their baby died or if they died, like what that would mean for you and how that might impact you. Because if you do this work long enough, you will work with someone who has a baby die. Like, that's just an absolute fact. And you'll work with many women who have miscarriages. And having more sensitivity and experience and more evolved and mature thinking around death is only going to benefit you and the women that you work with. So I hope all of that wove together to make some sort of sense for you. I think it made sense to me. It's a peek into my brain the last bunch of weeks. Some of the things that I saw that were inspiring and sent me down some different thinking paths. And I would really, honest to goodness, love to hear from you if you are someone who wants to share how this maybe impacted you, questions that it brought up, stuff you liked, stuff you didn't like. I really love hearing from people. You can email me at margo@indiebirth.org, and I will totally email you back myself. And that's it for today. I'll leave it there. And thank you so much for listening. I appreciate your willingness to delve into some of these topics that can be really challenging. Have a really beautiful, blessed day.
If you enjoyed what you heard, please hit the subscribe button and give this podcast a 5-star review. For more enriching content and conversation around the primal physiological process that is pregnancy, birth, and beyond, please head over to indiebirth.org. And if you are in the Duluth area seeking prenatal and midwifery support, you can find Margo at duluthmidwife.com. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.